Baseball Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Ah, what a week we have in store for you, but when we come right back, it's Lauren Coleman, cryptozoologist, and your phone calls. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. I don't know, Lauren, but that looks like a little toy or a cutout to me. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's one of the Carnegie series Tyrannosaurus Rex. I've been looking online, and there's some interesting similar, you know, the Safari company puts out these, and they're quite similar to this.
So the next question is that actually from the caller who called in, or we may never know?
I think you might have been punked.
Not me.
Not you. No, you of course aren't, but they're trying to. I think it's a hoax.
That's why we have experts on like you to tell us what you think. A lot of people fast-blasted me. They don't think it's real either.
Right.
The picture definitely doesn't look real to me.
No.
I don't know about his story, but...
I mean, I also wonder about, is that the proper kind of cage that you'd put a rabbit in?
That looked like a bird cage to me.
Yeah, it looks...
Or a hamster cage.
A lot of little funny things.
You know,
about 9 inches tall, probably.
Yeah, and he was saying that this was knee-high.
Right.
And that's not knee-high.
Right.
With regards to hoaxes and things, wasn't there a story of the Minnesota Iceman that people thought might have been a Bigfoot? We talked about it back when you were on with me in, I think, August. About this, but it's such a great story. Tell us a little bit about this again.
Okay, in 1968, there's a man named Terry Cullen. He was a student in college, and he went to a stock show, you know, at a state fair, and he was seeing this animal that seemed to be under ice, and he went to his college, and he tried to get anthropologists to come out and see it. It looks about... 5.5 feet tall, totally covered in hair. One of the eyes are out. The arm is up. It looks like a Neanderthal man under ice, so to speak. He couldn't get any of his professors to come out and look at it, so he wrote Ivan T. Sanderson, who was a cryptozoologist at the time and a pretty famous author and would go on radio shows and things. And Sanderson got very excited. He sent, you know, saw some pictures of it. And he came out, Bernard Heuvelmans, the father of cryptozoology, was visiting in New Jersey. They drove all the way out to Minnesota to spend 3 days with Frank Hansen, who's the owner, the original owner of the exhibit. And we're pretty convinced that something was going on. They in fact, did things like put a light on the top of the glass. The glass cracked a little, and they smelled rotting flesh. From this Minnesota Iceman, and so they promised Frank that they weren't going to publish, and of course, both of them went back, and Heuvelmans quickly published in France, and then Sanderson published an article in Argosy and appeared on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and talked about this in December of '68. So it quickly became very famous, and then one time Hansen was trying to cross the border. And Customs and the FBI got involved, and they wouldn't let him cross the border. So what Hansen said was that a creationist was putting this out, was the millionaire, Hollywood millionaire that mm-hmm. owned this, and that he had replaced it with a dummy model because he didn't want to get in trouble with legalities and customs and different things like that. I saw the Minnesota Iceman in the summer of 69 at the Illinois State Fair. I took many pictures. My friend and associate Mark Hall saw at the State Fair in Minnesota, took many photographs. We sent them to Ivan Sanderson. We compared all of the photographs, and Sanderson and Heuvelman said that there was 15 distinctive differences between the original Minnesota Iceman that they'd seen and the copy that had been replaced, the original. So I'm pretty convinced, you know, from talking to Sanderson and all of the people involved, that the Minnesota Iceman was the thing that slipped between our fingers. It was actually a body of a Bigfoot-like creature, which was pretty authentic, but was replaced because it got too hot.
Oh, that's sad. P.T. Barnum would have had a field day with that.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. He would have made a small fortune with that, wouldn't he?
So it's an exciting story, but it's one of those ones that has no end now.
Let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, you're up with us. Lauren Coleman on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, this is George?
It sure is. Go.
Oh, pleased to meet you.
Sure, sir.
I was just wanting to make my comment about the giant bird. I shot the thing.
You shot the giant bird?
Yes, I did.
Tell me more.
Well, I will. It was 1973. I live here in Alton, Illinois, and I just got back, and I was dove hunting north of Bethalto, and we were working a field next to a ridge, and the doves were pretty scarce, and it was getting toward evening, and we saw the thing coming out of the sky, but it was really high, way up. Oh, I'd say 1,000 feet. And as it came down, it came toward us, you know, oh, God, it was quite a ways away.
Was it in an attack mode or what?
Attack mode?
Yeah.
No, I don't know about that. It just came down. As it came down, we were just kids. We were only like 24 or 25 years old. We looked at each other, my friend, buddy, and we fired on it. We both had, well, I think I had 2 rounds. He had 3. We were shooting shotguns, of course, with dove loads, so they're pretty light. But the thing was down about 100 yards by the time the first couple shots, it didn't respond. And then it dipped. Then it gained altitude. Yeah. And then it started to collapse as it went over the ridge.
So you don't know if it went down or not?
Oh, it went down. There's no doubt about it. It was collapsing then. We went to look for it, but we were unfortunately incapable of finding it. Getting dark, and we were a little concerned about what we might have done. Although, you know, we've talked about it for the last 30 years. It was too big to be any bird of prey, and it was the funniest thing because it didn't have a normal head. The head was weird. It was real short and fat. It was wide, extremely wide.
Almost like a bat head.
Well,
you know, like
more like a,
looks like a little mouse,
like a man's head. I mean, it was, well, I'm a 270-pound man. It was like my head. It was big, you know. It was wide. I look like Hoss Cartwright.
Let me ask you: do you regret shooting at it?
How's that?
Do you regret shooting at it?
Do I regret it? No, not at all. You don't see anything. I've never seen anything like it before or since. I've hunted all my life. I was, you know, I've always hunted ducks and geese, and this thing was,
What color was it?
How's that?
What color? What color was it?
Well, it was against the dark, you know, it was getting toward evening against the sky. Oh. It looked dark, you know, it was a silhouette.
And how big?
I would say it was about the size of a Pontiac. It was, I'd say his body was almost as big, well, it wasn't maybe as big as me, but it was pretty big. And the wings on it were enormous. They were wide. They were, I bet it was 20 foot wide. You know, I've seen many turkey vultures. Well, they call them buzzards around here. But it was 4 times the size of any vulture. It was big. But it had a short head. Didn't have a long neck, you know, like a crane would have. It didn't have that. It was short, almost no neck at all. Not even like an eagle or we don't get a lot. Well, we get bald eagles in the winter, but we got golden eagles. Not like that. Not like any of the water birds. Short, very short. And the first couple shots, it didn't seem to respond, but about third or fourth shot, it dipped. And then we kept, well, we only had like one or two more shots, and then it started to crumple a little bit, but it went over that ridge, and that was half a mile before it, and we went over that way, but.
Well, Alton, Illinois, and thanks for your call. Alton, yep. Illinois, Lauren, is, of course, where we have the legend of the Piesaw bird.
Right, exactly, and there's some good reports from there in the 1948. I hope this individual tries to contact me because I'd like to ask him some few more questions.
Okay, we will have that done. And again, though, you know, shooting when maybe you shouldn't be shooting.
Right, especially if you're not going to, I mean, this individual lost this bird, and these birds are so big, their feathers will definitely get in the way of some shot like that, and by the time they're able to fly away, it's really a lost cause if they're trying to collect it.
What would happen, Lauren, if you made this bird very, very angry?
Well, I'm sure it would fight back. They probably have some powerful claws and certainly some incredible beaks. So these are not friendly birds.
No. Not at all, and I wouldn't want to be in the vicinity when that happens.
They're not your local parakeet.
You got that right. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Hello. I think this will relate to the cryptozoology. It's regarding a call that you had the other night about Morgellons disease.
Ah.
Which is a parasite, that they talked about.
Sure.
I just heard the very last part of it, and I got the Morgellons Research Foundation, went on the internet, and I had stopped talking about this to anybody because of the reaction that I had gotten, because it's so out there and so strange. But I went to the website, and many of the same things that I had related to people, it was right on there, and it's like I have it, like big time. And some other people I know have it, and some other people that... I mean, it took, I have a neighbor that moved in, several weeks ago. About a month and a half ago. It took me about a month to finally get him to see it. That's how elusive this thing is.
How do you think you contracted this?
Well, I've learned many things about it, and I know I'd actually like to get in contact with the woman who was speaking with you the other night.
Okay, well, we'll leave that for another show because, you know, Lauren, I don't think you have anything to do with these parasites. You don't know anything about this, do you?
No, this isn't cryptozoological.
Okay, yeah. But we will do a show on Morgellons disease, which apparently is starting to make its ugly way around the country, and that's just what we need. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, George, and welcome to your guest there, doing a great job. You mentioned correlative numbers, like the Spanish bombing earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've got 14 anomalies for 9/11 here, which you might, if you get out your calculator, I think you'll find it really outstanding. Very, very briefly, I believe New York State was the 11th state added to the Union. Afghanistan has 11 letters. The term the Pentagon is 11 letters. There were 65 on board Flight 77, which is 6 and 5 is 11. There were 92 on board Flight 11, 9 and 2 is 11. It was 9/11 for the attack. 9/11 is the emergency phone number. And 119 is the area code for Iran and Iraq, which is 11. And September 11th is 111, is the 254th day of the year, which is 254 is 11. And there's also 111 days left till the end of the year. And the first plane that hit the towers was 11. And Ramzi Yosef has 11 letters in it.
And, you know, some of this, obviously, and we're making reference to Lauren's new book, The Copycat Effect. Thanks for your call. Some of these, Lauren, are not coincidental, because I don't believe in coincidences. But then some others, how do you attest for these? I mean, like 11 letters in another terrorist's name, things like that.
Right. I think that math is very interesting because the whole, you know, magic squares, and you can get things to add up to 15 or 11 if you look for them hard enough. But other things are not coincidences, such as the flights and the 9/11. And
they were all picked out on purpose.
Right. I think there's the difference here between, you know, Once is chance, twice is coincidence, and three times is enemy action. And we certainly had enemy action going on.
Now, when this happened, when the terrorist event was planned, who or what kind of a mind would sit back and say, let's do as many things as we can with the number 11? Let's do it on the 11th. Let's find a flight 11. Let's, you know, how would that happen?
Well, I think that you go back to Yosef, and I mentioned this in the book. His original plan, which was the December 11th with 11 planes, he was the mastermind that really was connected to the 9/11 Operation 2. So that whole plan had been there for several years, really since the early 90s. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they picked September 11th, because it really tracks back to how they had this fascination with the number 11.
And he's rotting in some prison right now, and as he should, I guess.
Yep.
No doubt. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. I have a question. As far as hunting Bigfoot or shooting it, do you think anyone that does should be brought up on charges if they kill it? And if so, what charges?
If they kill it and it's not self-defense, for example,
yeah,
he's not being attacked or something. What do you think, Lauren?
Well, I think ethically they're going to get in a lot of trouble. There's only two counties in the United States that have laws against it. So right now...
Against shooting a Bigfoot, really?
Against shooting a Bigfoot. One is Washington State, and I believe there's another Pacific Northwest county.
And did they pass those laws tongue-in-cheek, or were they darn serious about it?
Very serious, very seriously, because there was so many Bigfoot reports that the local law enforcement individuals were worried about people from other counties and other states coming there specifically to hunt Bigfoot.
Yeah, and also shooting at people, I would guess.
I think that what will happen, if the first one is killed by a hunter, within 24 hours you're going to see laws put down that you can't keep doing that. But right now, Bigfoot is really outside the realm of an endangered species. It's not against the law, per se, to kill a Bigfoot. I mean, I don't really promote that or agree with it, just as you don't, George, but as far as it being against the law, I don't think that's the reality right now.
No, you know, and easy to say, you're out in the woods and you see a creature, you panic, but still, you know, the best thing to do is just move on.
Well, the other thing that's going on, if some of these people that are saying that, you know, Bigfoot is a man in a suit, are you going to take a chance that there's not some kid in a Halloween costume trying to spook his girlfriend and you shoot him?
Yeah, I mean, you'll feel awful. I don't think you'll get convicted of that. I mean, if you shoot someone like that in a costume, I mean, clearly,
well,
I think
manslaughter probably.
Maybe. Well, but you didn't even think it was a man. You know, I think clearly you would probably have a defense. I don't think, for example, hunters get charged with anything if they shoot another hunter accidentally, do they? I don't think
sometimes,
so.
Sometimes, yes, they do, sometimes.
Sometimes, and not all the time.
There are other cases like, people picking out individuals wearing white clothes and thinking it's the deer's tail, and then shooting that individual hanging their clothes, and they don't get charged. So
yeah, exactly.
It goes both ways.
How come we just can't capture one? I mean, what do you think the population is? 2,000?
Yeah, 2,000, 4,000. Very rare animal. If you consider that they're very intelligent, they've been very aware of humans for a long time. We're doing some analyses to see that they probably can smell metal. They really avoid humans. We have a very distinctive smell that probably most animals steer very clear of. And you also have the whole situation, if you have a bear population that's 100 to 1,000 times the population of Bigfoot, how many bear and mountain lion do you really come across in the woods?
Good point.
It's just not that frequent unless you're on a road or something like that and something crosses the road that you see these things.
We'll be back to wrap things up and take final phone calls with our guest Lauren Coleman. And if you haven't been up to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the picture. The consensus is, including me and with Lauren, that looks like a toy put in that cage.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.
And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain. I'll be back again and again and again and again and again.
Sun shines most of the time, and the feeling is laid back. Palm trees grow and rents are low, but you know, keep thinking about making my way back. Well, I'm New York City born and raised, but nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA's fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine no more. I have myself to no one there, and no one heard at all, not even the chair. I cried.
To talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
The story's the same one.
Pick up the After Dark CD by going to www.afterdarkcd.com or go... Also online at the coasttocoastam.com website, there's a link at the bottom, or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. We'll be back. We'll take phone calls again as we move toward the top of the hour with Lauren Coleman. Well, I got word, by the way, that Jolene Blaylock from Star Trek Enterprise definitely wants to be on Coast to Coast. She will be on sometime next week, one of the first hours, and the day, of course, anywhere from Tuesday to Friday. I don't have the exact day yet, but she wants to come on. We'll talk about Star Trek. Yeah, it is ending. The last program will air May of 2005. And we'll take phone calls, too. Those of you who are Trekkie fans, you get a chance to talk with her. She's a delightful person. Back to the phones we go with our guest, Lauren Coleman. Oh, by the way, Lauren, what's next on your tab? What's up for you?
I'm actually going to write a children's book oriented towards cryptozoology. My 20-some, 27 books have been mostly for adults, even though, you know, juveniles can read them and all of that, but I really want to look at cryptozoology from a 12-year-old point of view.
You're going to be the new Mr. Wizard for kids, huh?
No, I don't know about that, but it's just a little experiment I want to do.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, you let me know when that book's done. I'd like to talk with you about that. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
This is Andy from Springfield, Illinois.
Hi, Andy. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I used to live in South America as a missionary for about 4 years, and one night I was almost about 1 o'clock in the morning. I was out on my veranda, and the dogs were making some noise, so I was leaning over, and all of a sudden I feel this big wave of wind, and then this whooshing sound, and this massive black bird flies by and goes down and attacks a dog in the neighbor's yard. And I found out later on it was a harpy eagle. And I went, they had a couple of them in the zoo down there, and I went over there, and these harpy eagles get to be up to 70 to 90 pounds with 14-foot wingspans. I mean, they're the biggest bird I've ever seen in my life. And they're just so, I mean, it's like a big German shepherd with wings.
That's bigger than a condor.
I mean, they're huge. Never seen anything like that. I was wondering if your guest is familiar with them.
Yes, yes. Harpy eagles, Central America, Northern South America, quite big. I don't know if they're as big. Really, they only grow to be about 40 inches in length and can only weigh about 20 pounds. So they may look huge, but they're a relatively normal-sized bird. But they can go upwards of 50 miles an hour, though. They're quite fast.
How tall is a penguin, Lon?
A penguin? 2.5-3 feet tall. So, sizable bird.
So a bird about that height, that's a big-looking bird.
Yeah, and, the emperor penguins can be quite intimidating looking. So, people have talked about being attacked by penguins.
Not a lot of tree branches will hold up a flying bird like that, huh?
Like a penguin?
Well, a penguin with wings, if it was able to fly. I mean, that's a pretty heavy bird, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be that's a bird that's certainly made for the ground.
Absolutely. Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jerry. I'm calling from, I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm from Paducah. I'm a professor at Paducah University.
Well, welcome, Jerry.
And I'm calling to tell you that the pictures you got today were totally a farce, because about a week ago I got a call from a young man from Clarksville.
You did?
Yes, I did. I happened to be at the receptionist's desk, and she asked me if I would check the phones for a minute, and lo and behold, I get a call, and this man asked me if I could put him in touch with somebody to show him a strange animal. And I said, well, sure, I'm a professor of biology, and I will come check this out. And we made arrangements to meet at Taco Bell in Clarksville, and I got there, and we had a little meeting, and we got to his house, and his front door was open, and we proceeded cautiously into his house, and the cage was broken open. To me, it looks like it was cut open, but the animal's gone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you believe his story, Jerry?
I did. I mean, why wouldn't I?
You know, we got a call. It must be the same person, and I don't believe that the picture that we're showing, which I don't believe is real.
I have no idea what the picture looks like, but I know that he said he never took pictures of it. He gave it a bowl of water because the talk show host asked him.
That was me.
That
was me. I told him to do that, and I also told him to call a university. You still there? I guess not. He's departed on us, Lorne, as the dinosaur has.
Well, I wonder if the professor was a hoax, too.
A whole series. It's a plot.
It's a plot.
This thing we might be able to milk for 10 years.
In 1998, I was writing my book, Cryptozoology A to Z, that came out in 99. And all of a sudden, there was all of these Internet traffic and trying to interest me in this thing called an Ozark howler, and they said they'd captured one and they had eyewitnesses, and there were new websites about it. It was an elaborate hoax that was traced back to a college student in Kentucky. So sometimes those people out there just do this to see if we're going to, you know, bite. But there are a lot of much more credible people out there that actually are having these experiences.
And well, and, see, and that's the important thing, and that's what you have to weed through,
right,
shift through that, and get the right ones. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
We're fine. Thanks.
It's Tim from Phoenix.
Go ahead, Tim.
It's a story of an old girlfriend of mine who had lived in Paradise Valley, which is a suburb of Phoenix, in the 60s. When she was 10 years old, something like that. At that time, Paradise Valley was kind of out in the desert. Now it's very affluent and surrounded by mountains. And her father was gone. It was just her and her brother and her mother. And they heard something on the roof of the house. And it's like in the middle of the night. And she remembers crying because it was real loud. She said her brother went outside, kind of mad, thought it was like a burglar or something. And it was a Bigfoot standing right in front of him. And he said the Bigfoot put his hand on the guy's shoulder, her brother's shoulder, kind of saying, you know, mentally or whatever, telepathically, like, I'm not going to hurt you. And she said there was a big wall around the property, and it just ran away, jumped off over a 10-foot wall like it was nothing. And right behind Paradise Valley is Superstition Mountain, so I'm just going to see if Lauren knew any reports back then of Bigfoots in that area. But I actually met her brother later on as an adult, and I said, did that really happen? He goes, yeah, it happened.
It's just down your alley, Lauren.
Yeah, oh yeah. There's reports from Superstition Mountain. I got reports from New Mexico of people talking about the Bigfoot there that were able to keep up with their car. You know, they were able to run alongside the car down there. Yeah, from the Superstitious Mountains over to the Big Thicket in Texas, you have quite a few reports of, it seems to be Bigfoot down there with the arid conditions seem to be thinner and much more mobile and fast.
There's no doubt in your mind that Bigfoot is real, exists, is in this country, and probably all over the place.
Right, is three-dimensional, is not fourth-dimensional, is a flesh-and-blood creature, yes.
Not extraterrestrial?
No, no.
An animal from this planet?
Yes.
A beast of some type?
Waiting to be discovered. A breeding population of you know, hairy apes.
What do you think of this telepathic thing that some people talk about?
It's hard to explain one unknown with another. That was something that Ivan Sanderson taught me long ago. And so people get feelings, and we really do have a sixth sense, and we aren't using all of our brain and all of our senses. So there may be something going on there, and certainly Bigfoot. Carlton Kuhn used to say, if Bigfoot is the one that will inherit the earth, it's probably because they and don't go in the cities and get all the pollution, but maybe also because they know a little bit more about telepathy or a sixth sense. So maybe there's something there, maybe not, but we haven't seen verifiable evidence of a Bigfoot, let alone the telepathy that they have.
Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi.
It's Kat.
Hi, Kat.
Back in 74, there were a group of us, seven in number, representing various branches of special forces. We were either on leave or just freshly out of the military. We went up into the Oregon Mountains on the Illinois River. It's rough country. Three ways to get into there after you get past a certain point: on foot, on mule, or by helicopter. Nothing else seems to work very well. Anyhow, we went in and we had an ex-NOM pilot drop in a 12-inch dredge for us, chopper-wise. And, of course, our supplies and gasoline and all that other stuff. And in the process of getting back in there, we came across an area that had a really bad smell. And I, not knowing too much, said something about a skunk, and one of the guys from Yeah, we got back further, and we set up and started working, and we were doing pretty good. And we hadn't been in there more than, maybe 3 days. And one night, this god-awful sound came echoing through the canyon. Had no idea what it was. And after about 45 minutes, maybe an hour of it, Reb says, "I've had it." Well, of course, we were all up and alert. We had an assortment of weapons, including some rather sophisticated stuff. A couple of 50 caliber sniper rifles, a couple of AKs, and numerous other things that were useful if you were going to get into a small war with something. Anyhow, we had sniper scopes and night scopes, and we started scoping the area, couldn't see anything, and finally, Reb said, "Okay, let's try this." And he cuts loose with one of the most god-awful rebel yells you ever heard. And it took us about 4 hours to be able to get close to replicating it. Anyhow, we had a screaming contest with this thing. And after a while, it stopped screaming back. Leave us alone for maybe 4 or 5 days and start screaming again, and we go back to the same routine.
It sounded like it was following you?
Don't know whether it was following us or whether we were in its turf.
Yeah, that's
whatever
true.
It was, but we couldn't see anything. And it didn't molest our equipment, didn't molest us, but...
Did you think it was one as opposed to many of them?
That's what we thought. But Reb seemed to know a whole lot about it. Of course, like I say, he was from Tennessee. And... he didn't say an awful lot other than the fact that it wasn't the things we thought it was. And we finally, after a month, finished up and got out of there, and we each, after paying off the chopper fees and all the equipment fees and everything else that we had to pay off, we each left with 40.5 troy pounds of gold. Never heard that sound again until I was listening to Art Bell one night, and he started playing some of these recordings.
Which we just played about 10 minutes ago.
You got it. And all of a sudden, the little bell in the back of my head rang and said, "Oh boy, guess what we had there?"
They're out there. They're everywhere, Lorne. If you had to pinpoint the states, Mr. Coleman, that they were in, everyone... of the, let's say, the 48 states here?
Yeah, I'd say from Northern California up through Southern British Columbia is probably the most concentrated area, with wilderness areas like this gentleman was just talking about.
And you have a report in Alaska, so there's 49. What about Hawaii?
There's not Bigfoot in Hawaii. There's Minihue, which is the little people, which is a whole other story. And Rhode Island, for some reason... supposedly doesn't have any reports, but I think there's probably just because it's such a small state. But, certainly the concentration is the Pacific Northwest, up through Alaska, too.
Get any in my old home state of Michigan?
Oh, Michigan has a great history. The Sister Lakes area, the Monroe Lakes area, those strawberry-picking fields have some of the most classic reports from 1962 through 1965.
How about Missouri?
Missouri, you have the Momo there, the Missouri Monster, 1972 reports, and those link up with the River Road over in the Alton, Illinois area. And so that whole area is quite interesting for those. And it goes right really from the Momo area of Missouri right on over into Southern Illinois, Murfreesboro, Illinois. Those areas have quite a few reports.
Let's go to another caller, Wildcard Line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good.
All right, I have a couple of questions here. My name's Nathan.
All right, Nathan. Couple minutes to go, so take it away.
Oh, great, thank you. I'm in Eugene, Oregon, part of the Pacific Northwest. We got many thick woods out here, some beautiful spots. We got some lava flows.
Speak up as loud as you can, too,
okay.
Nathan.
One of my favorite parts is this lava flows we have, and I could just imagine Yetis or Sasquatch or any wild. But my story st- stems back to Illinois, my hometown. And I noticed one night I pulled up in my parents' driveway when I was younger, and it was probably 1 or 2 in the morning, and I noticed something in a smaller tree, which I can only describe as maybe like a lemur or a lemur. It looked like that, only a lot bigger. And I noticed it climbing up the tree, and it freaked me out. I ran inside, and I mentioned it to my dad the next day, and he, you know, he just totally blew it off, thought I maybe seen a cat or something. But it did have a really long tail. It had fur, a lot of fur, white fur, and that's what I noticed distinctly.
What could this have been, Lauren?
It sounds like an opossum, but, you know, I'm not sure, you know, was there hair on the tail, and how big was it? There's also been reports of Cotamundes that have been reported. No lemurs in Illinois, of course, but white fur really connects up with an opossum.
And, you know, you never know what some people in these private zoos or petting farms have, and they get loose, right?
Oh, yeah, the reports of tigers roaming certain areas, or kangaroos, different things like that. We have to really hook them up and see if they're escaped animals.
Lauren, thank you so much. The new book, of course, is called The Copycat Effect. Very worthwhile reading. CopycatEffect.com is a website, plus LaurenColeman.com. All of that linked up at CoasttoCoastAM.com. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, George, for having me.
Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure with you. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. Hope you had a great Valentine's Day. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.